Hello, this is Liv Peterson from Starting Up Now. Thanks for joining us today on KMNP Shift. In this podcast, I have the opportunity to interview L. Brian Jenkins, author of No More Nonprofits, Moving from Dependency to Sustainability. In this episode, we will discuss the final thoughts of No More Nonprofits. Take a listen and hope you enjoy KMNP Shift. Welcome, Brian. We're going to finish today with Chapter 11, just discussing the final thoughts of No More Nonprofits. I want to ask the question, in your time, in your entrepreneurial journey, and through the process of writing this book, what was one of the biggest lessons you learned through the process of writing No More?
You know, when I started the journey down writing the book, I was completely done with the nonprofit industry. I was experiencing what I would call racism from within the funding community, and particularly for me, within the Christian funding community. Opportunities were not coming our way, not because we weren't doing good work, simply because we were not getting the exposure and the visibility that we should have been by some of our primarily white-led ministries that were set up in Black and brown communities. And so it was at a particular meeting several years ago where this organizational leader literally stood up in the meeting and said, if anything is going to be accomplished in Chicago, it's going to come through one of these four ministries. All these ministries were well-known, all well-funded, and all run by white men and women at the time. And it was an insult. I happened to be speaking from the front of the room, and some colleagues heard her also redirect a person who wanted to learn more about entrenuity, but this person literally said, entrenuity works for me. And technically it was true because we had a contract to teach entrepreneurship with that organization. But the person that was interested in learning more about entrenuity as an organization, what could have happened is she could have redirected him and said, let me introduce you to Brian and his team, versus saying, if you want to learn about entrenuity, you can learn about it from me. And so what I discovered is that even in this community, in this industry, Christian or non-Christian, faith-based, non-faith-based, there is a level of competition for funding that no one really makes you aware of. So when I started down the path of writing No More, it was actually N-O-N-O, not K-N-O-W, not No More, but No More. I'm done. No, I'm done. No, no, none. I was frustrated with this model. I was like, this is ass backwards. This is not the way that it should take place. We should be pushing the for-profit, not the nonprofit. And so I was frustrated. I wrote the book, and in the process of doing the research and doing the discovery, I realized that I wasn't saying no more to serving, no more to the mission and vision of entrenuity. I was saying I need to learn to know more, like to become more knowledgeable. So the title changed from N-O to K-N-O-W, No More Nonprofits, Moving from Dependency to Sustainability became the full title. And what I've learned is that I entered into an industry that I was completely unaware of because I really just wanted to serve and teach kids how to own and operate their businesses. These kids primarily being on the west and south sides of Chicago, but that did not negate the fact that I needed to know the industry, the history of this industry, and how this industry worked, because it is an industry. I'm in the ETS, the Education and Training Services. It's a $6 billion global industry with the highest growth rates being in Asia, particularly in China. And so if you're walking in like, hey, I just want to learn and do good, you know, you need to know more than that. You know,
blindsided.
Absolutely, because you'll find out that what I was perceiving sometimes as racism was oftentimes competition. Mm. And so you have to learn how to compete better. What we discovered when we were learning about 990s, the information is right in front of us. But I was not taught to look at that 990 to say, where's X, Y, and Z organization getting their funding from? You know what I'm saying? It was like I had to discover that on my own once I learned what a 990 was all about. And then I used that strategy to say, okay, well, if I can learn these things, what information can I pass on to the next Brian Jenkins who's coming up? Like I got into this field when I was 26. Mm. If I could give the knowledge and the insight and the experiences as much as I can to someone else so that they don't have to go through everything without knowing, without being blindsided, it's better to know what you're walking into. Mm. And that's the thing, that simply having a good heart, simply wanting to serve, is simply not enough. You have to know how the model works, how the industry works, and that this industry, in many instances, particularly for nonprofits, was set up for wealthy people as a way to redirect their tax dollars. Mm. The founder is Carnegie. And Carnegie, at the end of his life, one of the things that he was concerned about with this industry, the nonprofit industry, was that he was concerned that they had set up an industry that was dependent, that we had set up an industry that had become completely dependent on the wealth of the rich without having the sustenance or the sustainability of the organization. Mm. And so the very things that we're focusing now or redirecting now and all that kind of stuff when it comes around sustainability was one of the core hazards that Carnegie pointed out. And saying all that to say, if I had to start again, you know, redo this model, is to know what you're walking into. If you are in an educational industry, who are your competitors? Mm-hmm. It's like doing a business plan,
yes, absolutely,
you know, for your industry so that you can not only survive and compete, but you can also innovate. And so you have to think like a for-profit within a nonprofit in order to survive.
Mm, I love that. And it's so interesting because I feel like when people finish reading the book, what people have said is, wow, like I learned so much. My eyes have been open to the issues that have even existed.
Right.
And people are asking the question, well, what do I do now? What do I do now?
Sure.
And one of the questions I want to ask you is, what is the best way to support Black businesses and why does it matter? I feel like getting to the end of the book, that's a question like, what can we do? How can we do it better? How can we grow from this old model into something different? Yeah.
One of the outcomes of No More has been my deeper interaction with white-led family foundations and funders, private groups as well. And we do a workshop called Level Up. One of the outcomes of this is I say there's three things that a foundation can do. Obviously, they can support a Black-led nonprofit organization. One of the ways is by giving for every dollar that you give to a white-led organization that's operating in a Black or brown community, find a Black-led organization that's credible, you know, that's doing what they say they're going to do, and give 3 to 5 times as much. Because the challenge is that we tend to give to people we know and we trust. Mm-hmm. I fully get that.
In
I do
circles.
That. Absolutely. But if you don't get outside of yourself and get outside of your circle, then your giving is going to oftentimes, it's going to be the same way every time. So I challenge your organization to say, make an effort. Most of these people are business leaders. They've been able to develop wealth and it didn't happen overnight. Figure out where those organizations that you can get involved with now. And maybe this doesn't happen. It's not going to happen over a year. Maybe it starts with a discovery process to say, okay, you know, we're going to redirect 30% of our giving or whatever it may be to a Black or brown led organization within this particular community, but don't keep the giving always going down the same lane. And so in this process of interacting and having relationship, it's opened up foundations to say, well, why do we give to this organization every year? What are things that we can do to redirect some of our funding? And I talk about those steps in the book, you know, but it has to be intentional. And that's what I tell people all the time. You know, in the previous chapter, I talked about intentional disinvestment requires intentional investment. And I would say the same thing applies for foundations, for private families or individuals that say, hey, we want to be intentional about redirecting our funds away from always giving to white-led organizations that are oftentimes set up in the community but are not culturized. I did a comparison, you know, and tracked the giving of white-led foundations and where their money went to, and did a comparison to the same level of giving to Black and Brown-led ministries and organizations in the same 10-year period based on their 990. Mm. In one particular year, I believe it was 2010 or 2011, we were able to determine in the city of Chicago, and these are not churches, these are just organizations, nonprofit organizations, that the giving to white-led organizations in that same year was almost $30 million. And the giving to Black-led organizations in the same community led by Black and Brown people was $1.9 million. Wow. And when you have the facts right there in front of you, facts being given by their 990s, you begin to ask and say, why is this continuing to happen? Mm-hmm. Aren't those that are in the community, that are from the community, that speak the language of the community, they know the culture, why aren't we giving to them? That begs the question is, why don't we even know who they are?
Mm.
This is one of the things I want to make people more aware, because when I look at entrenuity, if it wasn't for key people that connected me, then I'm no different. And so that's why one of the taglines we have is coaching, connecting, and capitalizing. And so if you're not intentional about your connecting, then your giving oftentimes, or even being aware of who the leaders are, your giving will reflect that your giving is not diverse.
And I love this book because it has opened people's eyes to the reality, like I said, of what's happening, and then shifted their mindset of,
absolutely,
okay, this is an issue, this is a problem.
Yeah.
I'm going to change the way I give.
Right.
I'm going to change
right.
the network I have. I'm
yeah.
going to change the way I view things.
Right. Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, we want to bring awareness. We definitely want to bring change when possible, but many people are simply not aware.
Mm. So the next question I have is, mm-hmm. describe how your organization is making a significant social impact.
Hmm. Well, depending on the client, the people that we coach through Moxie, we track metrics. We're able to track the progress, whether that be, you know, a growth in revenue, a growth in market share, a growth in maybe how they launch and operate a program. When you're able to show that you have a demonstrated level of success, you're able to go to a funder, go to an investor and say, this person or this organization came in at this place. We were able to provide an assessment, work in conjunction with them. And as a result of our efforts, they've been able to accomplish this. Sometimes that's revenue-based. I'm thinking of a particular person right now. This person came to us, was recommended to come to us, and they were running a nonprofit, doing pretty well, but did not know that they were charging too low of a price. This person was a nonprofit leader, very good at technology, but didn't know the business side of the business and realized that they were undervaluing their hourly rate and was not charging again for administrative costs. Once they were able to figure that out, assign an appropriate value for their time, they ended up having an opportunity to raise more capital and charge more for their programs. And what I'm saying, charge more, they were able to go to their donors and say, hey, the program that we actually thought was costing us $20,000 is really costing us $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that information, with that process that we discovered along the way, it was like, it was not me doing the work for them. It was saying, hey, these are the things that you need to do to figure out your own solution. They were able to figure out what the real cost is. And then literally a group came to them and said, hey, we have literally, I think it was around, like, let's just say $250,000 that we want to support a Chicago-based organization with. And this person was able to take their new budget model that we had just finished maybe a week ago and send that off to the person that was calling about the funding opportunity, and they were awarded the funds. But the challenge was is that if she would not have known what her real cost was, she would have still been functioning in an underfunded capacity. Mm-hmm. My goal is always to, you know, operate 20% to 30% over costs. Now she was armed with that information, made the appropriate changes, not only in their program, but also in their budget, and entered their new fiscal year and was able to raise an extra, it was almost around $250,000. But she knew her real costs. In our construct of this industry and social enterprise, you have to know what your real value is. Mm. And oftentimes when you don't, you think you're just doing good to do good.
You'll get taken advantage of.
But you'll be taken advantage of. You will not scale. You will not be able to really know what the next threshold is that you can cross. And the other thing is this, sometimes you won't attract the right people on your team. You'll oftentimes stay in the same stagnant place. And maybe that's great for you if that's your goal and purpose. But you'll oftentimes attract people to something that can scale, something that they can push beyond themselves.
Mm, that's really good. So in ending this episode, if you could just give one piece of advice to our listeners for next steps after this podcast, right? Because somebody can be listening to this podcast and be like, wow, that was a lot of great information. Mm-hmm. What is the next step someone can take, whether it's purchasing your book or signing up for a workshop?
Sure. Practical steps. Yeah, you can get a copy of No More Nonprofits, Moving from Dependency to Sustainability on Amazon. That's our bookstores where people purchase from. They can also sign up for a membership on Skill Center to test that out as well. And you can also, if you're ever in Chicago or you're in Chicago right now, come and taste and see. You know, literally, you can come down to the Entrenuity office at 1449 South Michigan. Again, Overflow is on the first floor. Moxie is on the second floor, and see what we do firsthand. For the listener or the person that's not in Chicago or, you know, wherever you may be, I think one of the things that helped me make that transition was realizing, you know, as I say in the early chapters of No More, is that this is an industry and the nonprofit is simply a legal structure. It's not the mindset that you need to operate in. Mm-hmm. We need to be thinking of being solution oriented, using the PSA, the problem, the solution, and the action, and to be able to be innovative within wherever you may be. If you see your community and there's a challenge, how can you turn that challenge into an opportunity? How can you work with the local leaders, the local pastor, the local mosque, the local school council, the principal, to say, how can you be an innovator and have a consensus around solving a problem? Don't do it from an isolation and just kind of, you know, parachute in and say, hey, we got the solution. Work in conjunction with the existing leadership that's already there. So it can be, as much as it can be, a grassroots solution that there may be solidarity that you can build that around. So it's almost like a coalition to solve the problem versus doing it independently of getting the support that you need from your clients, your customers, or the community. So don't do it in isolation. Be innovative and have a for-profit mindset. Not in a sense of just saying, hey, we want to make money, but we want to be able to create sustainability for our organization, our company, those that we serve, so that we can become stable enough to be able to generate the revenue that allows us to survive, you know, in order to fulfill our mission and our vision. But don't be stagnant. For somebody to come with a grant proposal, come up with a business solution, create a business plan, and identify what that solution can be, and don't limit yourself to a nonprofit mindset.
Thanks again for joining us today on KMNP Shift, where we discuss the unseen and unspoken barriers you must overcome to do your job. We are always happy to hear from you, so please reach out to us at www.entrenuity.com. Interested in booking a workshop on this content? Email us at info@entrenuity.com. Follow us on all social media channels at Entrenuity, And don't forget to grab a copy of your book, No More Nonprofits: Moving from Dependency to Sustainability, available on Amazon. Until next time, this is your host, Liv Peterson, with KMNP Shift.